Hij is ex-Playboy hoofdredacteur. Zij is detox coach. En dit is Wat Wil Je Drinken?
Hallo, ik ben Jan Heemskerk. Ik ben 59 jaar en daarvan heb ik er 43 gedronken. Ik vond het zelf wel meevallen, maar ik dronk waarschijnlijk toch ietsje meer dan goed voor me was. Mijn laatste drankje was een koud biertje op visite bij vrienden op 5 september 2016.
Hallo, ik ben Jacqueline van Lieshout, 47 jaar en daarvan heb ik er 25 gedronken. Alhoewel slechts 3 keer per week, wel altijd in een goed tempo en met een blurry einde. De laatste kater was op 22 juli 2016 na een immens dronken avond op Terschelling.
Jacqueline, wat wil je drinken?
Een theetje. En Jan, wat wil jij drinken?
Koffietje. Nou, we hebben natuurlijk al 5 afleveringen gemaakt waarin we uitgebreid gesproken hebben over hoe wij zijn gestopt met drinken. Het blijkt tot ons grote genoegen dat er veel mensen hebben geluisterd. En Jacqueline, we zijn wat?
Ja, nou ja, we krijgen natuurlijk heel veel mails en vragen en cursusaanvragen. En ook of er meerdere afleveringen komen. Dus daarom hebben we besloten dat we elke aflevering een gast uitnodigen die, net als wij, ook geen alcohol meer drinkt.
En na die gast vragen we dan eigenlijk precies dezelfde vragen die Jacqueline en ik elkaar vroegen. En dan delen ze hun ervaringen met ons. En dan kunnen wij op die manier dus de luisteraars inspireren.
Precies. En vandaag hebben we een internationale gast. So we're going to switch to English. I hope you still understand everybody that's listening. Because, you know, alcohol is for everybody all over the world. And today we have Dan Carradine. Dan
is an American. I rehearsed this. Carradine.
That's good, man.
Not with a Dutch T, but with a flowing D.
Yes.
There you go. As everybody knows, he's an American television personality, dancer, choreographer, and actor. He's a popular jury member on Dutch TV for dance shows. And last week, ladies and gentlemen, he celebrated his first year alcohol-free. Good to have you here, Dan.
Thanks for having me, yeah.
Well done, your first year. What do you want to drink?
I'm drinking cappuccino.
Nice.
Yeah, and it works. A lot of caffeine in my life these days.
So, Dan,
yes. It
feels like a therapy session. What, do you remember your first drink?
Yeah.
What it was and what happened?
Yeah, it was a wine cooler.
A wine cooler?
Yeah,
what's that?
Like
please explain what a wine cooler is.
It's like a cheap, I hope this doesn't offend anybody, like girly kind of drink.
Oh, yeah. Very sweet.
Very sweet.
Yeah, yeah.
And my sister, she was in high school and she had some friends over and one of her friends snuck me a couple upstairs. I think I was probably like 12 or 13 years old, something like that.
Oh my gosh.
But I had one or two and then, you know, I didn't drink again for a couple of years after that.
But you do remember.
But I do remember.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the first time I ever drank.
Did you have that same feeling that I did when I was 14? Like the first sip, you sort of fall in love with it?
Yeah, it just kind of felt cool and, you know, and I don't remember feeling buzzed or drunk or anything like that that first time. I just remember the feeling of, oh, look at that. I'm having a drink.
I like this.
Felt cool. Yeah. I had 4 older brothers and sisters who all drank in high school. So I saw that. So I was excited to, you know,
kind of prepped
to be cool and
part
be
of
like that.
Old, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we skip a few years. Never any...
No, I never drank until I got into high school, right? And then as soon as I got into high school, it was 100%. There was no like dipping my toe in and like, oh, I'll try this or try that. It was right from the first time in high school, it was blackout drunk.
Was it the same for your brothers and sisters?
I don't think so. To be honest, I've never really had that conversation with them. There are other alcoholics in my family. My brother's an alcoholic as well. But I don't know if their experience was the same as like right from the beginning. But
did your parents drink?
You know, a little bit.
I
rarely saw them drink when we were kids.
Yeah.
It was once in a blue moon at parties and things like that. But we never had alcohol or anything in the house. And it wasn't part of the family dynamic until we got older. Until I got older and then it was part of the family dynamic. Once I was later on in high school, maybe around 16, 17 years old, and then outside of high school, then family gatherings where everybody was drinking together.
So it could have been that you just didn't see it as a child.
No, my parents really didn't drink. They made up for it later in life. You know, they're not alcoholics. They, you know, it wasn't anything like that.
Why did they start? It seems to really...
I think it was... they had obviously a hectic life raising five kids. My dad was a stockbroker, but they also opened the dance studio that they still have to this day. And their lives changed when they opened the dance studio. A lot more hectic, a lot more stressful. And I think that's when they started at the end of the night having a glass or two of wine. And eventually that became a little more of a habit, and then family parties and all that stuff. And it just kind of grew from there.
You kind of eased into it.
Didn't yeah. You? Yeah. They eased into it.
And
yeah.
With them, you probably.
Well, I didn't ease into it.
You were way ahead.
I was way ahead. Yeah. As I said, right from the beginning in high school, it was, you know, I drank to get drunk right from the first time. And that never changed. Every party I ever went to, every time we, you know, however we snuck around to find alcohol, things like that, I wasn't trying to find two beers. Because that was no fun. Why would I drink two beers? Made no sense to me. Yeah. Yeah. Because I never loved the taste of it. I drank to get drunk. So it was whenever in high school or whatever I was trying to find alcohol, it was find a 12-pack or a case or a bottle of something or, you know, enough that I knew I would get drunk that night.
That is a big sign.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, well, looking back, it was so obvious, but you know, I never thought twice.
A lot of people that are listening are in denial, you know, in itself, which is fine, but it's just the whole thing of what is the difference between when are you an alcoholic or when aren't you?
Also, why the hell did you start so suddenly so all in? Why? Have you ever considered why?
Yeah, I mean, I know, you know, when I fast forward 4 years and I got to college, I realized that... I would drink in social situations, drink a lot in social situations because otherwise I wasn't comfortable. I don't think that was the case in high school because I remember always being relaxed and happy and easygoing and friends with everybody. And I just think I was, you know, I liked the feeling and that's how I wanted to do it. I don't think it would be easy for me, I think, to explain it away as, oh, I had anxiety in social situations, mm-hmm. so I drank. I don't think that was the case at first. I think I just drank to get drunk. It was like once I started, I could not stop.
Yeah,
I knew once I would take that first sip, I was just going to keep going. And even when my friends, you know, it would be 2 o'clock in the morning and half the party was gone and my friends were slowing down because they were going home or whatever, that's when I kicked it up a notch, you know, and kept going.
Yeah.
So, you know, they talk about whether it's an allergy or it's genetic or whatever it is. I don't know. I never had an off switch. Then once I became reliant on alcohol, then I think it became a social crutch, you know, as I got older and I needed it, because I didn't know how else to behave because I was always used to being under the influence in those situations, if that makes sense.
It's your normal, really. Your normal set.
Yeah. So to be sober in like a party type situation was, I couldn't do it. I didn't want to do it. But I'd rather not go.
It is interesting what you say, like the moment I became reliant. I mean, what is then the difference? At one point do you realize, I mean, if you even really realized that you became reliant?
Yeah, I think.
I don't know if I'm making sense.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. I think. So I was a dancer, right? I am a dancer. And I remember being in high school and high school dances and things like that. And we used to go to clubs and sneak into clubs in New York City and things like that.
Webster Hall.
And Webster Hall and the Palladium and all that stuff. And I used to jump right in the circle and go for it. I was a dancer. I had no fear of that. Sometime around the time I was like 19 or 20 or something like that, I became one of those, I can't do that if I don't have some drinks in me. And that was weird because I was a dancer. I was in dance studios rehearsing and working with dancers all the time.
So what happened?
But then I would go to a social setting and I didn't want to be in the middle of anything, let alone a circle. I didn't want to be in the middle of a group talking. sober. I would be sober.
Yeah.
I would want to be on like the corner of the bar hanging by myself. And then when I would get a couple of drinks in me, then I would venture out a little bit. So I think I created, from drinking so much in high school, I think I created this social anxiety almost. I don't think I had it by genetics or by anything else. I think I created it from being so used to drinking in those situations.
This is so interesting, the whole why thing.
Yeah.
I see with the people I coach and the people that respond to my book that after a year, they sort of start, it's hard to generalize this, but then they start to get to the why.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully I can get to that why. what I know is that as the years passed, I justified my actions by saying I was antisocial. I just assumed I was an antisocial person. And everybody I met, including when I met my wife, and she would wonder why I didn't want to go out or wonder why I didn't want to go meet different people, I would always say, I'm not a people person. I'm antisocial.
Yeah.
But I wasn't antisocial because I realized that now, being sober, I'm not antisocial. I love to talk to people. I created that whole talking point to justify drinking. And I did not want to go out and meet people or talk to people or be in social settings if I wasn't drinking.
Yeah.
It's a very clever construct, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But I didn't even... I'll tell you, I believed it too. I had truly convinced myself that I was just an antisocial person.
Sure, I believe that.
You know, yeah. I bought into it. Like, I didn't feel like I was lying to my wife or to anybody else. I just thought, I don't really like people.
Yeah.
But now that I'm sober, I'm finding out I talk to everybody.
Well, you give yourself...
Just put us back on the timeline. Where are we here?
Post-college?
You met
yeah, this is post-college, yeah. This is in like my mid-20s.
So you made it much on the way for 10 years now.
Yeah.
In this particular way of handling booze and...
Yeah, but I mean, it steadily increased, right? So, which I think happens with most alcoholics, mm-hmm. but...
Progressive.
Yeah, it was, you know, when I was in college, I kept my drinking to the weekends. And then after college, you know, it snuck into Thursday nights and... Wednesday nights, and then by the time I was in my mid to late 20s, I was drinking 7 days a week.
Alone?
You know, I would take days off. No, I wasn't drinking by myself yet. But I was, I would take days off if I wanted to or I had to or life called for that. But I wanted to drink 7 days a week. But always, at the very least, with whoever I was dating mm-hmm. or friends or whoever I was hanging out with at the time.
Any excuse. You did need an excuse.
Any excuse. And I would jump from friend to person, whatever.
Oh, yeah, I remember
that. So
that
I could drink all the time.
Like you sort of surround yourself with people that drink as well.
100%.
You immediately recognize
each
other.
My best friends were all booze bags like I was.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Also, you reinforce yourselves among yourselves to this is okay. This is during the week. This is the weekend. This is socially. This is all those excuses.
This is normal.
Yeah, and I had a sense of entitlement from... Day one, because from the time I was in college, I started making money and I was fairly, for my age, I was successful. And that continued every step of the way. Every year I got a little more successful and I was making a little bit more money. So I was, why shouldn't I be doing this? Look at what I'm doing. Look at everything around me.
I deserve this.
I deserved it.
Oh, I recognize
that's how I looked at it. And no one was questioning me then. But if anyone did question me, I would have looked at them like they had two heads. Because what are you talking? Look at what I'm doing, and look at what you're doing. Don't question my behavior.
Yeah.
Because I'm killing it. You know, and that's how I looked at everything.
Pretty good at hiding.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't hiding yet, right? Because I was still during the day. I was in insane shape. I was dancing all day, every day, doing great jobs and everything. So. I looked great. I felt great. There was no reason for me to even question myself, right? So I wasn't hiding anything. I was going out and getting drunk at night, but I was up at 6 a.m. and right back to work.
Yeah.
So it didn't matter.
It's like Gene Anthony Ray.
Yeah. But it wasn't until I got to like sometime around 30, 31, 32, somewhere in there, that now social life sort of changes. You're getting a little bit older. My wife and I are thinking about, it was my girlfriend at the time, we're thinking about getting married.
Was she a drinker as well?
No. No, she so was, loved to go out and order a nice bottle of wine, but she would have a glass.
Oh my gosh.
Two tops.
Then the rest would be for you.
100%.
And she was okay with that?
It worked out great. So from the beginning, she always, like from 3 months in or something, she would question me. Now and again, I would have a particularly bad night. And she would be like, what was that all about? But, you know, I was such a manipulative shit. I could convince her of anything and explain to her why it was okay. And again, end up flipping the conversation to look at what I'm doing. Look how great everything is. Look how much money I'm making. Yeah. This is the life I live. I don't work a 9-to-5 like you do.
Right.
I do. I'm in the entertainment world. This is how we live.
Yeah.
And I would convince her it was okay. And I would convince her that I could shut it off at any time. So when I did have, you know, a bad incident, and she would call me out on it, I just wouldn't drink for a week. I'll show you.
Yeah.
I don't drink, you know, see how easy that is. Boom.
Oh, it's so classic.
And it was, you know,
fabulous.
And she believed it. Poor thing would believe anything I would tell her. You know?
So did you, like, for most people, it takes like 5 to 10 years for the realization to sort of sink in. Like, I really have to do this. I mean, did you ever have periods of quitting and starting up again or trying to do less or?
Yeah. I mean, I did. I quit before we got married. I quit because I had a couple bad nights in a row that were embarrassing for me, embarrassing for her. And so I just said, yeah, okay, I'm going to quit. And I was still a workout freak at the time. So I started running. And 6 months later, I ran the New York City Marathon. You know, it was like trading addictions. That's all it did. I was a dry drunk. You know, I was bitter that I wasn't drinking. I wasn't going out. I wasn't socializing. It was like,
poor Dan.
Yeah, I was, you know, this is nonsense, but I'm going to show her that I don't have to drink. And so then I ran the marathon and acted like, you know, see how great I am and how healthy I am. And
let's,
you know,
open all the this. Champagne.
And so I ran the marathon on November, it was probably like November 3rd, 9th, something like that, New York City Marathon. And then by Christmas Eve, we got engaged because, see, I had convinced her. That point I was okay. So this was the perfect time to ask her to marry me. And we got engaged and I had a glass of champagne at the engagement party.
Do you remember that glass?
Oh, hell yeah, I remember that glass.
Oh, tell us, because this is interesting.
It was just, so I drank it really slow because I knew she was watching.
Just going to be the one, yeah.
I knew she was watching and it was just going to be the one. But, you know, there's 20 people around at my parents' house and stuff. So, you know, I took a sip of this person's, sip of that person's. I mean, it's, you know, I was right back. It was amazing.
Never forget
but
that.
But then I didn't have another drink until a week later, New Year's Eve, and I drank 4 or 5 Guinness. So this is like the messed up thing. I had never had Guinness in my life. And now I'm trying to think, well, what's like a heavy beer that'll fuck me up if I only have a few? You know, so I had 4 or 5 Guinness and a week later I was back to drinking wine 2 or 3 nights a week. And a month later I was drinking 7 nights a week again. I mean, just like that, but I was drinking more.
Yeah.
Right. I was already drinking more.
Oh yeah. You hear that all the time. You have to make up for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she would say, hey, it seems like you're drinking again, whatever. Yeah. But I didn't drink for 6 months. See, there's no problem.
Yeah.
There's, you know, and I was just right back to where I was.
Did you get really defensive about it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. How dare you?
How dare you say anything?
How dare you? And again, the manipulative guy that I was, I would find a way to flip the conversation and make it more about you and, you know, and how you're coming at me or accusing me things. And, you know, and I would put her on the defensive.
And then suddenly, at some stage, it turns around, right? What happened?
The bottom.
Did you hit rock bottom?
Well, I mean, happened? what was the bottom, right? So this continued forever, and it just increased and increased. My low point and my bottom are two different things. My low point was when my son got sick. When my son was 9 months old, he's our second child. I still get upset when I talk about this, just thinking about it. But when my son was 9 months old, he got very sick and was in the hospital, and they didn't know what was wrong with him. Really didn't know what was wrong with him. And you know, every hour kind of mattered type situation. And he was in the hospital for a couple of weeks, and only one parent can stay in the hospital with the kids, right? With your child. So I convinced my wife that it was better for her to stay in the hospital than me, so that I could go home and drink every night. Because God forbid I skipped a night of drinking. And that's how sick I was at that point, is that it was more important for me to be home having a drink than it was being in the hospital with my son when it could have been his last day. That's when I really started to personally recognize that this was messed up. I didn't change anything. I didn't tell anybody, including my wife. But that's when I started to recognize, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
You know, luckily my son ended up being fine and he was okay. But I never forgot that, you know.
I believe it.
That I look at as my low point. My bottom came when we were in the middle of the pandemic. 'Cause the one thing that always, you know, they talk about highly functioning alcoholics. Mm-hmm. I mean, I like to say I was the most disciplined alcoholic.
Oh yeah.
Because I started drinking every day around like 5 or 6 o'clock. And I set my alarm on my phone for when I had to go to bed. So even if I got hammered, my alarm would go off to let me know it's time to go to bed. And I would listen to that.
So you really? would function again.
So, well, because then I would get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, even if I was wasted, I would get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and go to the gym and I would sweat it out and I would get the alcohol out of me so you wouldn't see it in my face. So I would sweat out everything I drank so I could stay in good shape, whatever, go to work. You wouldn't smell it on me and no one would be the wiser. And that's what I would do every day. And when the pandemic hit and you took away my travel, it just like everybody, you took away everyone's travel. You took away their work. You took away everything. All the things that kept me in line was taken away. I didn't have to get up in the morning anymore. I didn't have to be on television or be around anybody, whatever. And that's when I really started to go off the rails. So now I wasn't hiding it. I had no one to hide it from. So I just kept drinking. Now my wife was like, "What are you doing?" But it's the pandemic. Everybody's drinking.
Yeah.
Everyone's all depressed doing this, you know.
Yeah. Of course. But
that's when I really started to hide it too, right? I was hiding it for a long time as far as how much. You know, I would hide when I would finish that bottle of wine and sneak in another one, and I would do all that kind of stuff. But now I was hiding the fact that I was taking a drink at 10 in the morning. I was,
oh, really?
You know, or at 12 or at 3. Like I started drinking all day.
Those strict rules were out the door.
The rules were gone. Yeah. So now I'm just drinking.
Yeah.
And
well, this whole controlling
really started to hide.
This controlling and disciplining was not for nothing.
Yeah.
You knew subconsciously, if I don't do that, it's going off the rails anyway. Yep. And it's going to cost me my career.
Yeah. So I went off the rails and I tried to pull it back together a couple of times because I knew how bad it was. And my daughter, my 9-year-old at the time daughter, looked at me sideways. And me and my daughter are like best buddies. She's just like me. And so we were out active all day, every day, playing soccer together, running together, like doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And now she's looking at me in the morning and asking me what's wrong, telling me I look funny, things like that. So that's when I started to realize, uh-oh. If she's noticing that, Natasha's noticing, everyone's noticing it. So I tried to pull it back together and I couldn't. And I mean, I really was trying and I would tell myself, don't drink this, don't drink this, don't drink this. Boom, yeah. Drank it. And I couldn't stop. And then I wanted to, I would, you know, roll out of bed at 6 o'clock in the morning. How long do I have to wait?
Yeah.
You know, and wanting to drink right away or whatever. Yeah. And that's when I finally said to my wife, I need help. I can't. I'm trying to pull it together and I can't.
Just to intervene for just 1 second. What do you say to people who say like, I'm not that guy because he's a real alcoholic. He has no control. I'm not a real alcoholic. I've got it under control. What would you say to those people? There are many of those people.
Oh yeah, that say I never drink before five. I only do like what I did three nights a week.
We get it a lot. Like people come back to me. We're not like that. We're not like him. He's a real alcoholic. He could end up under a bridge in a brown paper bag, and we are different. What do you say to those?
Yeah, people? Well. So I thought I was different too, right? When I got to rehab, my roommate was a guy they literally just pulled off the curb. Homeless guy pulled off the curb and got him in there. And I'm roommates with this guy. And the first 2 days I'm looking at him thinking, I'm not this guy, you know. And by the third day I was there, I realized I am that guy. Yeah. We operate the exact same way. He just hit a different bottom than I did. But it was only a matter of time before I ended up there. If your mind works the way mine works, an addict brain, you know, we're all at different stages mm-hmm. of being an addict, but we're all going to end up in the same place if you don't take care of it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was a don't drink before five. I was a guy at the gym at 6 a.m. I was the guy making lots of money, all of that kind of stuff. But nothing separated me from the guy laying in the gutter than my bank account or my area code. But my brain worked the exact same way. And I was going to end up there too.
You know, I think that is the danger of the word. I always say this, of the word alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't have a cocaine-olic or a nicotine-olic. You know, there's no, people say, I'm before that. I'm not there.
That's just not going to happen to me.
And that word keeps us, as far as you can say that, separated.
I always go like these days when you always meet those people who go like, I never drink more than two beers. I go like, it's good on you. Very jealous of you because I would like to be one of those people who can actually drink two beers and then stop.
But yeah. I would love to be one of those people.
Wouldn't you? It'd be beautiful, right?
I wouldn't because what fun is there in two of them? Really?
Yeah, no, I agree. But it's like I go on the golf course with my buddies, you know, and it's brutally hot out and everybody's playing. And one of the guys cracks a beer and I look at that and I say, oh, that would be nice right now. But I know I would be wasted by the end of the round.
You want 20.
And drinking the rest of the night.
Of course.
You know, I can't stop. That's it.
Just one beer at a specific, at a golf course, a football pitch, whatever. Yeah. One beer. Lovely, lovely.
But you have that in every area. When it comes to dancing, when it comes to working, when it comes to this, that, you do everything obsessively.
Yeah. I have an addict brain.
Yeah.
That's it.
Like me.
You know, but I think to answer your question about the people who listen to your podcast and say, that's not me or whatever. I think like one test, when my brother got out of rehab, my brother said to me, my brother didn't think I had a drinking problem, but he said, why don't you not drink for 3 weeks for 21 days? See how you do. Okay. You know, and I thought nothing of it. I couldn't do it. I couldn't go 21 days without drinking, you know, and that right there should have said something to me. But I said to myself, yeah, but I don't have to, you know, like I could figure out how to say, yeah, but I'm okay. I don't have to not drink for 21 days, but that was already an issue that I couldn't go 21 days without drinking. Mm-hmm. That's a problem. You know, you create all these habits around yourself and you think, I thought because I was disciplined, my habits were okay, but they were still habits.
Yeah.
And habits usually only get worse. They only grow. The more you have those habits, the more they grow, you know? So all my drinking habits, they continued to grow inside of me and get worse and worse.
So how was rehab for you?
Awesome.
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 Really?
Yes. Obviously I did not want to go. It took about 2 days to get over the guilt of I'm abandoning my family. I'm abandoning my children. And when I got past that and realized this was better for them.
Right, yes.
And I opened myself up to what rehab was about. Those were the best 30 days I had had in years. I felt like I belonged. I felt free. I talked to everybody. And, you know, when I talked about the antisocial thing, I was talking to everybody. I mean,
must have been liberating.
It was so, and I realized, my God, I love to talk to people.
Actually, do love to people.
But I felt like we all had something in common.
Oh, yeah.
And they understood me. And I was in this different place.
You get to meet your tribe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was laughing again. And I just felt good. And as I said, those are the best 30 days I had spent in so long. Admitting things to myself, learning about myself, and not feeling ashamed of who I was. I thought I was alone in this. I thought I was the only one whose mind worked the way it did, who drank the way I did, who thought the way I did, everything. And I realized, God, all these people are just like me.
I don't hear you talking. You didn't feel that all that bad while drinking, did you? Physically. I mean, most of the time when I think of stopping was because there's terrible hangovers. I really didn't want the hangovers any longer.
Yeah, you know, I never suffered from bad hangovers. I suffered from anxiety.
That's bad too.
I think my anxiety was alcohol induced.
Yeah.
I think I made it so much worse than it would have been. But the hangover itself, I was in such a routine of waking up in the morning and going to the gym.
Oh, he was sweating it out.
I would sweat it out. I'd shake it off. So even when I felt like shit, I would get up and go to the gym, and in an hour, I felt okay. So the hangovers I could deal with, but the anxiety is what I struggled with. And I begged for that first drink every day to crush the anxiety that was inside of me. You know, and it's that old cycle that you put yourself in. The drinks crush the anxiety, but it makes it so much worse the next day. But then you drink again to crush the anxiety, and I just
keeps on going.
I was in that awful cycle.
So when you got home, how was that first period? Did it feel naked, vulnerable, or did it keep on being awesome?
It kept on being awesome. I mean, I have felt health-wise, obviously, I feel 1,000 times better.
Yeah. I was wondering about that because
I mean, as I said, I would shake off the hangovers and everything, but I still felt like I felt okay, but I didn't feel good. Yeah. I had alcohol running through my veins, you know? I feel good. I like to look at myself in the mirror. Because I didn't do that for the last month, 2 months, 3 months, something like that before I went to rehab. I love how, you know, they talk about being present. I mean, I am in it with my kids.
Yeah.
You know, my kids and I have always had a great relationship, but I was physically there with them. I wasn't mentally there with them. And they don't know what has happened to me, but when you see the way they act with me, they feel it. You know, they wouldn't be able to articulate it. They're only 8 and 10 years old, but just how close they are with me.
They must sense something.
Yeah, they sense it. Yeah. And I love that. I mean, it makes me feel like $1 million.
You look back, in retrospect, when you look back, you must look back, obviously.
Yeah, right? I try not to, but yes, I do.
Sure, why not? I mean, what do you feel when you look back? Regret, remorse, whatever?
Regret. A lot of regret of lost. The two things I regret are lost years with my kids. But at the same time, incredibly thankful that they're still children and I get to enjoy the rest of their childhoods with them. And I regret what I put my wife through. I was the third child in the house that she had to take care of. And that's bullshit, you know? And when you talk about when I got out of rehab, you know, how good I felt about myself, how good I felt about my kids, but we're still in the process, my wife and I, of her trusting me because she wants to and she's trying to, but she still looks at me sideways.
Oh, yeah.
And she's going to for a long time. And, you know, I just think that that trust that I betrayed for so many years is going to take a long time to build back up. We're in a wonderful place, you know, and she supports me completely. But you know, there's a lot of repair to do for what I put her through for all those years. So I don't want to say we tiptoed around each other when I first got out, but it's like, she'll be the first one to tell you she's relearning who I am.
Yeah.
She's known only alcoholic Dan.
Yes.
For the 16 years she's known me.
Yeah.
Now she's meeting sober Dan, who she's never met before.
Yeah.
So it's strange for her. And it's strange for me.
And for you, right. Do you trust yourself already?
I do. I didn't at first. I do now.
How did it come about?
You know, I was very, I was so careful when I first got out of who I was around, what situations I would put myself in, anything that I would do.
Yeah.
I was so afraid to put myself in a situation where I would slip. Now I'm a year in and I'm not worried about that. I know I don't want to, you know, continuously put myself in a situation that could make me uncomfortable or something, but I'm not worried about anything about where I'm going to be or who I'm going to run into now.
Well, a year is a big thing, right? Because you went through all the seasons, all the holidays, all the situations.
Yep.
That is a really, really, really big thing. So do you do a lot of maintenance? Do you like things in the, you went through the 12-step program?
Yeah, I'm still in the 12-step program.
Okay.
That's going to be an ongoing thing for me, just because I think it keeps it fresh for me.
A lot of the people that are listening have no idea about even the existence of a 12-step program.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would be too long to explain it fully. But basically, it's about you have to go through each step. Doesn't matter how long it takes, right?
Right.
That is just your recovery. And after you finished 12, you go back to... No, you don't have to go back to one.
Maybe
a question is, could you please explain short what 12 plan is all about?
Well, yeah, and what it is for you and where you are or...
Yeah, the 12-step program for me was... when I first got into rehab, it was a bunch of slogans that I thought were nonsense. and I quickly realized they were slogans because, you know, that they're all true. But you know, your first one is, basically the program is about accepting, that you don't have control over the alcohol. And then going through these steps to learn about your history of alcohol, you know, how it came into play in your life, how it has played out through your life, and how you're going to handle it moving forward. And the people in your life and how to live.
Yeah.
And how to live without alcohol. When I finally, my whole life was governed by willpower, right? And when I finally gave up that power and said, I don't have control over this. I need someone else's help to do this. And they talk about, you know, accepting your higher power, whatever that may be for you, that's the beginning of it. And that leads you through the rest of the steps. You know, I think step four was the hardest part for me. When you get to step four and you have to sit down and write
a letter to,
you write about each situation in your life, all of the people in your life, the institutions in your life that you hold resentments against. Holy cow, it's amazing when you'll sit clear-headed and think about all the things you resent from your childhood and from your, you know, adult life that have been sitting in your brain that you've been holding on to that you need to let go of. Yeah. That was the hardest part for me, and letting go of those resentments. But man, it was freeing when I finally got through that. And then when you get through the later steps, it turns into maintenance, like you talked about,
mm-hmm.
And doing daily check-ins with yourself, seeing how you are, how you're feeling.
What is eating me up?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What's eating up inside and not letting anything brew. You know, as an alcoholic, as an addict, all I did was sit in my shit all the time and let it all fester in my brain. And now I don't. And I use the steps to help me work through whatever's going on in my life and to deal with it.
How many people did you lose of your old crew, so to speak?
You know, I didn't lose anyone. There's just people I don't hang out with as much. I still talk to them. I still text with them. I don't blame them for anything. I just, you know, I don't hang out with them that much because our relationship was mostly drinking.
Yeah.
So I don't want to do that. I don't want to go to dinner with them because all it does is make me want to pound bottles of wine with them because that's what we did.
Yeah.
So I still talk to them because maybe one day our relationship will take a different turn than that. But for right now, I avoid those situations. But I didn't lose anyone.
Do people respect your decision?
Everybody I have spoken to about this respects my decision, supports me in this, supports what it has done for me personally, professionally. I've gotten nothing but support, which makes it so much easier, so much better.
I do want to ask you something which I think is very interesting. Your kids, I mean, your eldest is now 10.
Yes.
They might be starting getting interested at 14, 15, 16. Do you have any idea how you're going to talk to them about that? Or you're just going to say, I'm going to deal with that. I'm going to cross that bridge when I get to it.
No, I think about it a lot, actually, because I had to think about first, I had to think about what I was going to tell them when I was going to rehab. So that was I didn't want to lie to them. So I told them about daddy's hasn't been feeling great and daddy needs some help getting healthy. So they think I went to a place to get healthy.
And that was enough for them.
That was enough for them at their age. Yeah. I don't think I'm going to have the luxury of waiting until they're 14 or so. I think more like 12, maybe something like that. I don't want them to make them think that they're an alcoholic or that they're going to have a problem or scare them. But I also would have liked to know, I have since found out that alcoholism runs in my family. Mm-hmm. I have grandparents, aunts, uncles, you know, brothers. There's a lot of alcoholism in our family and no one ever talked about it. So, I don't know if that would have changed. I don't think it would have changed anything for me.
Maybe you would have justified it even more.
So yeah, but I at least want to warn my kids and give them a heads up of here's what I went through. Just be aware of it. I'm not stupid. I know you're going to experiment.
Yeah.
But please keep this in the back of your mind.
It's pretty similar. My younger son has two elder sons, but told him actually there's an alternative. You don't have to do this. It is actually dangerous to do it. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to stop you. I know that because if you want to drink, you'll drink. And but always beware. It's very dangerous. And lots of people have been finding that strange that I would talk to him like that. But I'm not strange. They are strange.
Yeah.
It took me some time to really realize that. It's like it's normal to tell him about something that dangerous.
Yeah.
I really believe he does drink. They all do. But I think he's slightly more moderate, slightly more cautious. And it would have been if I didn't tell him that, or at least so I kid myself.
Yeah.
So I would do that, yeah.
I keep on saying to my daughter, if alcohol didn't exist and it would be invented right now, she's 10 as well, then it would be illegal for this and this and this and this reason. I said, so always take it seriously.
Yep.
Society doesn't take it seriously.
No.
But take it seriously.
It kind of angers me more and more. That's one of the things that's been constantly changing since I quit. It's like, getting more and more angry about it, about how we avail ourselves to this stuff, how we force feed it to everybody. It's really a societal problem.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I feel that way sometimes too, but I try to question myself or check myself in that. A year ago, I was happy with how readily available it was.
Yes.
And I have friends who like to drink, who don't have drinking problems, you know, and I recognize the way they are and their relationship with alcohol. And it's, I don't know if healthy is the right term to use, you know, but it's okay. They function fine and they're not, you know, reliant on it or anything. So I don't know what the right answer is. I agree with you. I mean, it's everywhere. It's pushed on people.
Oh, yeah.
You know? I mean, look at the pandemic, right? When everything shut down, but liquor stores were open.
Yeah.
By the way, I was like, thank God they're closing the liquor stores.
Essential.
But that was pretty amazing that alcohol is considered essential.
I know.
You know? Yeah. I mean, what a trip that was, you know? But it's part of the society that we live in. I mean, you know, it was like drinking was, I had figured out a way to put drinking into every part of my life.
Yeah.
Whether I was going, you know, whether I was golfing, or I was going to a Yankee game or a Giant game or fishing with my son or dinner with my wife
or
whatever. Somebody's funeral.
I know.
Yeah. I mean, like, I remember, I always talk about this, my daughter's first birthday.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
It was
I remember that one as well.
A first birthday.
Yeah.
It was a booze fest for all the parents.
Yeah.
What, like, how does that make any sense?
I know.
You know?
I know.
It was, I remember rolling the coolers in for everybody. And, you know, it's my daughter's first birthday. That was
awesome.
Disgusting.
We could talk for 5 days. I so recognize all of this.
You would, wouldn't you?
Oh, but you know, you were talking about your kids and what you're going to tell them. You know, I don't blame my parents for anything. Like, I'm lucky for the way I was raised and loving household and loving parents, whatever. But as the fifth of five kids, my parents were tired of parenting by the time they got to me. So they put rules in place for me. And they basically said, when I got to high school, if you get good grades, if you keep playing soccer, and if you keep going to the dance studio and you do those three things, you can do whatever you want. Man, I took that to heart.
Yes, you did.
And I partied so hard in high school and would stumble in my parents' front door drunk at 3 o'clock in the morning and not get in trouble because I was keeping up those responsibilities. That followed me through into my whole life.
There is a why, Dan.
I can do all of these things. I can drink as long as I handle my responsibilities.
Well, could it be that you were drinking to excess to take the pressure off?
Yeah.
Was it totally what I always said, to wrap yourself in red velvet?
Yeah.
To finally be, or what Al Pacino said, it was my way to relax. It was my way to stop the noise in the mind. There is a why.
Yeah.
There's aside always a why, from all the genes and everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
What a wonderful way to end this. As otherwise, it's going to last for 3 hours, which I'm fine with, but I don't know if the people that are listening are going to be fine with that.
I still wonder why. But
the why? He'll get to it. He's just starting the whole why thing.
Well,
me too. I just don't know. I mean, I was.
Your why?
Yeah, I was kind of stupid.
I was going to ask. What's your why?
Yeah, I drank. Everybody drank. So I did it too. And at some stage, 43 years later, I decided to stop.
Yeah.
That's it. I never thought. I'm speaking with people like you, like us. It makes you think. There must be something there that made me do it somehow.
Mm-hmm.
I still haven't figured it out. Well, it's fine. This is pretty stupid, but
it's not stupid. You just
It is. Having no reason.
I don't know. I've been obsessively focusing on the why for 6 years. Why? And it's liberating to get that answer, to stop the anxiety, to stop your allergy for a social talk. And I find your way of, is it the chicken or the egg approach? Did the alcohol induce the anxiety, or is it the other way around?
Mm-hmm.
So fascinating.
Well, it is too, because I look at people, like I've lived a very fortunate life from the time I was born, my upbringing and the area I grew up in and the family I grew up in and all of that. So sometimes I look at, you know, addicts who came from a very difficult life, horrible childhoods, horrible parents, things like that. And I go, well, see, they had a reason. What's my reason?
Oh, no, but you had a reason as well, because what you just said, I mean, I've just met you, but I mean, there was pressure on you.
Yeah. But
they were done with parenting. You had to do it by yourself, but you did have to live up to the expectations.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to psychoanalyze
you,
but
I think you are.
But you are. But neither of you, I've gathered, neither of you went to rehab or anything. You just decided to stop drinking.
Yes. On the golf course.
My therapy was just riding.
writing
Sorry.
On the golf courses when you decided?
This party I was speaking about earlier, it's like the day after my wife and I would go golfing in a nice little place. And we're all on hole three and so wasted from the boots of yesterday's night. I go like, fuck, I don't want to ever play golf like this again, and decided to quit, and I did.
Was your wife drinking with you on the course?
Yeah. No, we weren't drinking on the course. We were still on the puking stage.
Oh, just from that.
Puking stage. Oh, the night before.
What a fun round.
Oh, yeah. It was this beautiful golf course. I'm really looking forward to doing this. And now I'm here. I feel really terrible. I don't ever want to do this again. And I was going to say that right out loud. But like then I decided. And I tried to lose some weight. So kind of.
You just quit.
And that was it? You just quit?
Yeah.
Did you slip up?
No.
Wow.
I always go like, it was just enough. It feels like stupid, like I did it for such a long time. And
you were a big drinker.
Also, well, yeah, I guess.
Did you suffer? You go through withdrawal and stuff? No.
No, but the funny thing is I'm still scared. I mean, you talk about a glass of champagne. I have one of those stories too. My wife and I sold our boat. And the people who bought the boat brought a bottle of champagne to celebrate. I go like, I don't want to go get into that with these people. I don't know these people. So I'll just hold the glass with my lips and be done with it. And literally the first drop that hit my lips was like some eerie factory starting up again. Here we go. I'm all geared up and ready for you.
Yeah.
This is really, really scary. Yeah. That was the first time I actually felt that so heavy. So I know how it's dangerous. I mean, I do accept it. After a while, I do accept it must be some addiction if it's so, it's lurking in the dark somewhere, someplace. Those kind of analogies, I've always feel it's like really, really scary monster down there somewhere. If I leave it be, it's okay, but I never have to go near it again.
Yeah, I got that monster too. I know it's there. We were talking before we started this about whether I'm still in the pink cloud or whatever, because I still feel so good. But I do have the days where I think, oh, it would be nice if I could have the drink and they teach you in rehab and in AA and stuff. They talk about, play the tape forward. Yeah. And I'm very good for myself at playing that tape forward and knowing, like you just said, if I just that one sip, I know where I'm going to end up.
It's spooky, no?
It's scary.
It's really, really.
And it's like, then I'll get into that game of, I don't know if it'll take a week or a month or a year. But I will end up right at that bottom that I was at.
Oh, yeah.
It's only a matter of time. I think it would happen in a week, but.
Me too. I would dive right back in.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm fairly confident. If I touch one, I'll touch two or three and 10. That's it.
It's over. Yep.
Okay, then. Thank you for that. And thank you for being here.
Yeah.
Jongens, hiermee zijn we aan het eind gekomen van deze aflevering. We hopen dat jullie genoten hebben en dat jullie, jullie gaat helpen om stappen te zetten en te kijken of een leven zonder alcohol iets voor jullie is. Want neem van me aan, Jacqueline, wat neem je van me aan?
Ik neem alles van je aan, Jan, dat weet je. Maar mocht je na deze aflevering vragen hebben, kijk dan even op watwiljedrinken.nl. We hopen dat jullie het heerlijk hebben gevonden en dat je weer meer inzicht hebt gekregen in hoe wij en andere mensen tot een alcoholvrij leven zijn gekomen. Dan, would you like something else to drink?
No, I'm good.
En Jan, wil jij nog wat drinken?
Nee, ik heb al genoeg gehad.